ahead of this episode, I just want to say that in this episode of Hello Friend, Sophie and I mention sexual assault, mental illness, and eating disorders. Hello friends, and welcome to Hello Friend. My name is Bethany Rutter, and today's friend is Sophie Hagen. Sophie's a comedian, but she's also a podcaster and hosts the incredible Made of Human podcast. It was appearing on her podcast and the response to my episode that made me wonder if I should maybe do one myself. So thanks for that, Sophie. But first, how do we know each other?
Oh, thank you. That was so nice. Good thing you're doing a podcast. I feel like it's a response to everything you just said, but I know you asked me another question. So we know, oh God, how do we know each other? We must know each other from the internet, like in general. And I think the first time we kind of met was when I was treating myself to a 3-course meal at the Phoenix Artist Club. Was that not the first time?
I totally forgot.
And I was sitting in a corner being like, you know what? I'm going to eat 3 meals now. And that's what's going to happen. And then you walked in with a bunch of other cool people. And I was like, oh, no.
I totally forgot. I totally and completely forgot that that had happened.
I think about it once a day because I was just sitting there like in the corner being like, oh,
and
oh,
I was
God.
Having like a little pre-Christmas drinks with my friends.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, Sophie Hagen's at the next table. We follow each other on Twitter. But like she's not really like acknowledging that I'm here. Like,
no, I think I was like, oh, hey.
No, I think, yeah. And obviously, like, I probably read that as like,
I'm too cool.
Yeah. Like, she's too cool. She's like this cool comedian. And I'm just this like weird loser that no one really knows or cares about. But with hindsight,
it was so the opposite.
Yeah, that was like,
oh no. Oh, she's the kind of cool. It's the kind of person who wears lipstick. That's how cool she is. She's not afraid of getting it on her teeth.
Never. And I also think there's like fat vulnerability in eating alone.
Yeah,
and like,
definitely.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I would probably maybe feel the same.
But also, I think it's of course, it's worse when you're fat because that's the kind of thing you get, you know.
Abuseful.
Yeah. But I know a lot of thin people who would never eat alone. I think just in general, eating alone is
an anxiety-inducing thing.
Yeah, for a lot of people, I think it's that, you know, people who won't go to the cinema alone, people who, like, you know.
Yeah, I always find that so shocking because I love, like, even I, a hardened extrovert with a million friends, love doing stuff alone.
Yeah.
Because I'll probably just enjoy it more if I'm not constantly thinking about, like, is the other person enjoying this?
Yeah.
Like,
and you don't have to, like, I've been holidaying alone for, well, forever, it feels. And just, you know, I can, one night I can just sit down and I can book plane tickets in a hotel and I'm out. Where if you have to, you have to first, like, who wants to go with me on holiday? Or where do you want to go? Can you do this date? It's so much easier just doing it myself.
Yeah. And I apply that to my life in general. I love to go to theatre on my own. I love to go to cinema on my own. I love to eat alone. Just, you know, love being alone as much as I love being with other people.
I think I love being alone more, but I get you.
So you are a comedian. You're a very funny person.
Thank you.
I went to see you twice last year and I laughed a lot both times.
Thank you.
Something I thought was really interesting was your first show came out, you did it pre-Pokemon Go and it had a Pokemon joke in it. And I was the only person that laughed. And then the second time you kind of did the same joke again because the first one was like a warm-up for the second one. And it had come out post Pokemon Go and everyone laughed and I was like, I got that joke before.
I know,
it was cool.
It really ruined the nicheness of the joke.
Yeah.
I did a reference in my, because I'm writing a new show now, and I did a reference. I don't think it'll go into the final show, but once I said it out loud, I thought it was a reference that everyone knew and then no one laughed and I was like, wait, do I know something that other people, so do you know Cujo?
Is it a dog?
Yes.
I know it's a dog, and that's all
you know.
I know.
That's all you know.
Yeah,
I think it's one of those movies. I don't think I know any movies that other people don't. But Cujo was like this. I think I must have watched it like 25 times a day when I was a child.
And I watched Beethoven. That was my dog movie.
Oh, but that's a very different. Like, this is like if Beethoven was left by his family and did some crack.
Okay. So it's like dark Beethoven.
This is like Beethoven Kills.
Okay.
Like Beethoven turns on his entire family and just.
Oh, shit. I don't know if I'm up for that.
No, you don't have to be. You really don't have to be.
Okay. But no, yeah, this is clearly a thing that only you know about. This
yeah,
is like,
I felt very cool. I was like, oh, what, guys, you don't know?
You don't edgy know, Sophie
you don't know Cujo?
He's my boyfriend. He goes to another school. You wouldn't have heard of him, but he does exist.
Basic guitar.
And you are working on something new.
Yeah.
Tell us about your big new project.
My new show is called Dead Baby Frog. And it's
Dead Baby Frog.
Dead Baby Frog. It was, its working title was The Parable of the Boiled Frog, which is this experiment that was done in 1872 by this guy called Heinzmann, who figured out that if you put a frog into a pot of hot, very hot water, the frog would immediately jump out. But if you put a frog into a pot of lukewarm water, it would stay there, and then you would just slowly turn the heat up with like 0.002 degrees a minute, and the frog would never notice it was getting hotter because it happened so gradually and slowly. So eventually the frog would allow itself to boil to death, basically. And it's commentary on how that happens to people, you know?
You can tolerate and tolerate and tolerate, even if what you're tolerating is getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, but because it happens so slowly and over time, you don't notice it. And then all of a sudden you're in a situation you didn't necessarily sign up to be in, where you would have probably jumped out if it had happened immediately, but now you're stuck. So it's kind of about that, in terms of it being about my emotionally abusive grandfather.
I see. Mm. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to visiting the show.
And finding out how there's jokes in that. That's a good question.
But, like, I feel like you are quite good at wringing the comedy out of sad situations.
I bloody hope so.
Yeah. What was the kind of response to your last show?
To Shimmer Shatter?
Yeah.
So Shimmer Shatter was very much about being an introvert and feeling like a weirdo and a bit of a freak. And yeah, I guess like what we talked about with, you know, when you're just sitting alone and you feel like you don't really communicate with people well. And so it was about coming to terms with that, not being weird. You know, the whole point of it was basically, it's okay to be introvert. It's a thing. A lot of us are. Let's just be okay with that. So I would get a lot of people who had anxiety, a lot of people who were introverted, people who, you know, for some reason just didn't fit into the norm or what we perceive as being the norm. So it felt like a very, like a show that kind of gathered people. Yeah. And like gathered through Shimmer Shatter, I found my people. Like I found out who my audience
yes,
is.
And that's so true.
So like, for example, so many people come to my shows alone, and you know, some of them are a bit nervous about it. So they'll like, you know, I can see them on Twitter being like, oh no, I'm here alone. I don't know what to do. But I think I've created some kind of atmosphere of it's okay to be here alone. Like, this is the kind of place where I'm never going to pick on an audience member.
Yes. Okay. So this is like a key thing. Whenever I talk about you to anyone, and I do it all the time because I think you're really cool, I'm always like, I don't go and see stand-up comedy because I'm a fat woman, and I feel like that is such a dangerous person to be in the audience of any stand-up of any gender. Not just in terms of being picked on, but I don't want to hear fatphobic jokes, and so many jokes are fatphobic. Fat people are such an easy target, and I'm just like, I don't want to expose myself to that. So that's why you're one of the only comedians that I will see live, because I'm like, I not only trust you because I know you as a person, but also like because you're a fat woman, I know that I will feel safe with the jokes that you do make about like your body, fatness, anything like that. Like I don't have a, you know, it's not like I have a problem with any jokes about fatness, but it has to come from like a fat woman who is on the same page as me.
I'll tell you what I've realized really annoyed me with that. I was watching a stand-up show and a comedian did jokes about fat people, but he said the way he phrased it, and I say he as if we were in any way surprised, it was a he. He phrased it in a way. He basically said they. You know how fat people they.
It's like and an it, othering.
I kind of realized that. Oh, you don't even expect me to be in the room. It's not even.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
if any
is,
of you are fat, you do this, because that would have been a tad bit better. If he'd gone, hey, fat people, you know how you're like, you eat a lot. That would be so much better, because at least you're looking into my eyes and you're telling me your opinions to my face. But you're saying, hey, thin people, you know what fat people do, right?
Because surely I don't have any
in the room.
Any fans
I'm
that
in
are fat.
In the room.
Yeah.
And that hit me as, oh, that's why this is bad. That's why this is awful.
I mean, it would have been bad anyway, but it's like doubly bad that he just literally didn't expect there to be any fat people there.
Yeah, I feel the same when if people slack me off on Twitter and they don't tag me. I'm like, are you joking? Like, are you not even gonna? What,
you think
scared?
I can't take it?
Are you scared that I'm gonna like, I'm going to find out.
Yeah, I'm a name searcher. I'm a rabid name searcher. I will find out.
It's like, at least if you're going to abuse me, do it to my face. Like, don't do that thing. Like, if you like know me, don't.
Don't do it, either way.
I started a bad thing.
That really is a barrier to comedy for me. The fear of, like, fat jokes.
It's really hard. Like, because I interviewed a comedian for a thing that was meant to be an interview for a website, something, a long time ago. And he was the coolest. He was so cool. Like, he was from another country, and he would, where he would, like, stand up against the government, and it would be this... I mean, his life was in danger on a daily basis because of the way he spoke about criticized the government and his country. And he was such an interesting comedian. And then I was gigging with him in a comedy club in London, and he just did fat jokes. I just felt so like...
You're meant to be better than this. Like, you're meant to be a smart dude.
And it basically forced me to go up after him, because he'd just done all these like, oh, fat people shouldn't this, fat people are this. And then I had to follow him and... in front of like 200, 300 people that I'd seen laugh at that.
Oh, that literally like makes my stomach turn.
Yeah. And then I saw, and I always do this, it always happens in my head. I subconsciously just look around the room and see how many fat people there are and like see their faces and go, okay, well, they've just heard this. I can't not say anything. So I basically have to choose, right, do I call this guy the C word? In order for these four people to feel somewhat included and respected, but then I will not be able to do my set because 299 people will disagree and be weirded out because I've just slagged off the other comedian. But there's nothing you can do apart from to go, that guy, massive asshole.
Yeah.
Like, he's not right. And then do some fat positive jokes about like, oh, I look good, I look great, I'm sexy, I have sex, I'm blah, 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 blah. And then do my set. But by then people are just weirded out because... wait a minute, you're saying something that we don't agree with. Like,
we've never thought of this before. We've never thought of fat people as human.
Yeah, and like, this isn't funny because we can't relate to it because it's not in my head. But fuck that. Like, I don't know if I'm allowed to
swear on this. This is not regulated. We can swear.
Thank fuck. But I'll see those four fat people. And I mean, fat people aren't necessarily fat positive. So some of them, even they will probably go, no.
We deserve it.
I'm fat, and that's a bad thing. And I am losing weight. Don't worry about it.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's the worst. But there will be some of them who go, I'd never thought of it that way. Maybe she's right. And that's all I need. That's all I want.
Yeah, like I... this episode will come out a couple of weeks after the event that I'm about to discuss. But last night, I spoke at a kind of food writing event. And it was great.
Food writing?
Yeah, so it's like where people read writing about food.
What, like cookbooks?
It's more like kind of creative nonfiction or fiction about food.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know this genre.
Yeah, this
I'm intrigued.
Genre. And it was a great event, and it's run by three people, one of whom I know and respect immensely and adore. But yeah, I was on the bill. And I read a piece that I wrote especially for the event because I'm not a food writer, but I've been commissioned to write something for the event. And I wrote it about like the joy that I take from ordering and eating like English breakfasts. And I have very specific needs and requirements. And it was very much like about the joy of that experience and like the pleasure that I take in it. It was a very like positive, like food positive piece. And then a woman who was on after me, her reading was just so moralizing, and she had framed it in a way that was meant to kind of make you believe that it wasn't moralistic and it wasn't fat phobic. But you know, in the way that like we can say any shit that we want about bodies as long as we call it body positivity. It was like that with food writing. Like the stuff that she said, I was genuinely shocked by. She was literally talking about like portion control and about how sugar is not your friend and like stuff like that. And just because she'd couched it in this kind of like faux supportive language, I was like, no, basically what you're saying is just as bad as what any diet book is saying. So anyway, if she had gone on before me, I don't think I'd have been able to read my piece. I'd have been so embarrassed about like talking about the joy of food after someone had stood up and basically like done 15 minutes of like real bad moralizing and fat phobia. It makes such a difference to me. Like, it really affects, like, even though I'm this kind of badass kick-ass fat woman, whatever, like that kind of stuff really affects how comfortable I feel in a space, and I can't pretend that it doesn't.
Yeah, and that's a different situation because you're at least I'm a comedian and I have that, you know, I can make it, I can sack them off and be a bit funny about it, but you can't really do that in like a book.
Yeah, exactly. Fancy book event. If she'd gone on before me, I would literally have had to begin my reading with like, I think what the woman before me said was abhorrent.
Yeah.
And like, I don't want to have to do that.
I mean, it's so difficult.
No one should be putting me in that position. Like, I shouldn't be in that position. And you shouldn't be in that position that you have to, like, stand up for all fat people because a comedian that's gone on before you is just, like, so horribly prejudiced against them.
Yeah. But I also, I do it and someone has to do it. You know, oh, not someone has to, that sounds like I'm calling myself Batman, but because I can do it, I should do it, you know, because I'm in that, you know, it would be feel weird to go out and be like, oh, yeah, so anyways, I like dogs, you know, I have to say, I have to say it, and sometimes it's really fun, because there will be comedians who come up to me, and, you know, there'll be these, like, white, straight, cis boys who have never heard the word feminism before, and there was one a few weeks ago who like leaned in. He was like really like, Sophie, I just have a question. So body positivity, is that when you like exercise a lot because you want to take care of your body, like you want something positive to happen for your body? And I was like, oh my God.
I don't even know where to begin with this guy.
So much to unpack. Like, wow, okay, sit down. We're going to need a few hours of just going through this.
Hours at least.
But I was also once in a backstage room. I was doing a tour, like a 9-day tour with this with two comedians. And one of them was this really, like, he'd been on the circuit for like 70 years and he'd done the same jokes for 40 of them. And
he's like a million years old.
Oh, God, so white, so privileged, so all of that. Like, had never, like, only gigged in like men's clubs. And, you know, all of his jokes were extremely fat phobic, almost to the extent where I couldn't even really take it seriously. Like, it wasn't even damaging because everything he said was so wrong. You know, I hate my wife, that sort of stuff.
Oh, my God.
And I was, and I just went on after him and did my things. And, of course, they laughed more at him because that was the kind of gigs they were. You know, the audience were kind of in that same, haven't changed their views since the 50s. And, but I kept doing my stuff. And even though I wouldn't get as many laughs because people didn't understand, like, it was just so new to people that someone was being body positive. But he was intrigued, the comedian. He was like, I could see him, you know, stare at me after the gig and just try and work me out. He was so funny. At one point he said, oh, that was the first, I think it was the first gig we did. He looked at me and he went, I could train you. I was like, what?
As what?
I was like, you what? And he was like, yeah, just because I go to the gym a lot. And if you just go with me, I bet I could train you. Like, he went like that whole thing of, because all you have to do, right? All you have to do, if you cut down your calories. And I was just like, oh,
did
mate.
Did you listen to a word I just said?
Oh, mate. But it was so fun because I said like, oh, no, I'm not, like, I know all of that. And I've, you know, I've dieted for 10, 15 years of my life. And then I realized that it was damaging. And like, I'm really happy with my body. I love how I look. I love how my body feels. I genuinely think I'm just really fucking beautiful and sexy. And you could see, like, his mind was blown. He'd never heard anything like this before from a fat person. He was like, what? And I just said, you know, and also, like, he asked me about something that I did on stage. And I said, well, there are people in the audience who, like, because of me, when I was a teenager, I would be in the audience of comedy shows. And I would hear people make jokes about how fat people were lazy or stupid. And I would believe that. And that gave me an eating disorder. That gave me a depression, anxiety. So that is so damaging. It's so, and he went, but I do that. And I said, yeah.
You are the fucking problem, mate.
And there was just this, like, silence where he would, like, you could see his brain just went, like, wait, what? Because in comedy, we don't call each other out. Like, no one says, oh, you know, we just, you know, save it for a podcast and say it there. But it was like a click in his head. I don't think he did the fat phobic jokes. Well, not in front of me after that.
And, like, annoying as it is that he would have to need to see it through the lens of, like, this is a person that I've met and that I think is quite cool and what I'm saying is damaging to her. Like, that is annoying that he needs, like, a real person to, like, prompt him to behave better. But, like, at least he maybe does behave slightly better now.
And I think the difference is, because a lot of comedians at the moment are going, you know, oh, I'm being silenced.
Can't say anything these days.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the difference is that I never told him to not do it. I just said, oh, hey, if I'd seen you as a teenager, you would have destroyed me.
Yeah.
By all means, keep going, just so you know.
This doesn't exist in a bubble. Yeah. Like, you are not offended. Speaking to no one.
I'm in no way offended. I'm just, I don't know, sad that you do it and disappointed, and I probably wouldn't pay to see you.
Because it's just like, what you're saying is not new or radical or interesting. Like, the jokes that you make about fat people are just like perpetuating the same boring stereotypes. Mm. Like, that's not great comedy, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely not. It's absolutely not. It's just not. It's not new. It's 2017. Right? We're all... I mean, I'm at the point now because I really try and not say anything that's damaging or just like factually wrong. I'm at the point now where, because I started, I think it was before the Edinburgh Festival last year, I stopped saying ladies and gentlemen, and I just started saying people of the audience.
Yep.
So now I've done that ever since for like a year or so. And now when people say ladies and gentlemen, it feels like it could be, you know, speak from the 50s, because it's so weird.
Horribly
to me now. Yeah, it feels old-fashioned now. Which, and I think I'm, what, like one of three comedians maybe in the UK who do this. And yet I feel like, surely
how is everybody not doing
it? Yeah, it's so simple. We know there's not just two genders. Like, we know that.
Yeah, it's 2017.
Yeah.
It's literally 2017.
But people don't read on the internet as much as we do.
Yes, if only people spent as much time online as we do, they would learn so much.
Yeah.
The internet nourishes me.
Yeah.
Do you find it's a good place to, like, meet cool comedians? Or is that a thing that you have to do in real life? Like, you just have to get out and see people in real life to judge if they're funny. You can't tell from, like, Twitter if you think someone's going to be great live.
I think because comedy is a fairly small world, you just kind of know, you know everyone. And if there's someone you don't know who are suddenly getting some attention, you'll ask three comedians, you know, like, oh, who are they? And they'll say, oh, they're like this and this, because they will have seen them. Or there's always YouTube, and you can see 30 seconds of someone's act, and you're like, oh, yeah, I get what that is. And then there's a lot of people you give a lot of leeway because they're new.
Yeah, and everyone has to start somewhere.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I will do self-crit on this forever. Like, I did the worst jokes when I started out. The worst jokes. Like, the most horrific. Because I was like, I was a misogynist. Like,
yeah.
When I started in comedy, I was a full-on misogynist.
Like, yeah, and it's almost like there's this kind of evolution that you go from being like a misogynist to a kind of bad liberal feminist. And then hopefully at some point one evolves to actually like a truly intersectional approach.
It's almost like you start out by being very quiet because that's what you've learned, and you accept that. Oh, no, I'm a woman. I'll shut up because the men are more important. And then you're like this misogynist person. And then you realize, no, wait, I have a voice. I should start speaking up. I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to do. And then you become this like white feminist. And then you realize, oh, I'm also white and I need to shut up. And then you're back again to shutting up, but you still have the self-worth and the value, and you know that you're worth a lot of things, but you also understand your privilege. So it's almost like you have to realize that you're not privileged and then realize again that you are. And then you end up in this place where we know to listen to people who are less privileged than us. And that's difficult if you've spent years fighting to acknowledge that you should have more privilege
and
in terms of gender.
Yeah, it must be hard in like a space like comedy, which is so male.
Mm.
It's so male. And it feels like maybe when you're starting out, there may be a temptation to kind of pander to what you think white male comedians will like to get on the bill.
You would have hated me. I was the worst. You have no idea how bad. Like, the punchline, I did TV for the first time. This is all in Denmark, which also explains it, because Denmark is like so behind. But the punchline to the first joke I did on TV.
What year was this, for context?
2012, I think.
Okay, so a good 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah. But I'm not going to, like, oh, yeah, it's ages ago, because I knew nothing. So the whole joke was essentially a sexual assault joke. It wasn't, it wasn't the worst. I could, in to some extent, sort of justify it in terms of I didn't ever make fun of the victim, but it's still not okay. I would never, ever, ever do it again. But then the punchline was, and yeah, I know that women are probably more offended by this than men. And that's because, of course, more women than men don't have a sense of humor.
No.
And like, whoa, whoa, yay, go soft, whoa. And I was, oh my God, I was. Oh.
No applause in the world could make that worth it with hindsight.
Oh my God,
I'm so sorry that you did this.
I know. Your hero is problematic.
Yeah.
But then I moved to the UK and I did the exact same joke and there was just nothing. And I was like, guys, what's happening? What's happening? Like, we all know women. Stupid, eh? And I remember the moment. I remember meeting a male comedian, because why would I listen to women? A male comedian called Brian O'Gorman, Canadian guy. We were sitting on the bus. I remember exactly where we were. Me and my housemate Peter. Peter White is also a comedian. And then Brian O'Gorman said something. And I said, what, are you a feminist? And he said, yeah. And I was like, no way, you're a feminist. He's like, yeah.
What year was this?
That must have been 13.
Okay, cool. So not like last year.
Oh, no.
No, just kidding.
I've just realized this yesterday. And I was just like, what, you can't be a feminist. What, are you stupid? And then it was the way he looked at me. The look he gave me of just utter, I don't know what it was, just disrespect, I guess. And he looked at me as if I was so unintelligent and uninformed. And that's my worst fear, is, you know, that someone knows more than me. So I just immediately went home and I started reading, you know, just doing the basic Googling, joining all the forums and the groups on Facebook and Twitter and all of these things. And I just basically for a year, maybe 2 years, I said nothing about it. Like, I didn't make any statements that were either pro or against feminism or anything. I just wanted to learn. And then if you're just a fairly intelligent, logic person, it all makes sense. And you go, oh, no. Oh, no. I need to remove a clip from YouTube. And yeah, then I just started seeing it from this. I just realized it, I guess. Like, I saw the light and just, I mean, thinking back and like just how little I knew and then how much I still learn. There's a new thing every day at the moment where you go, oh yeah, that,
I shouldn't
course.
Say that because, yeah. Or I should think to do that because.
All the time, like even on the way here when we were in the cab, I would say, and I still do it, I say words like insane and crazy and I know as stupid as well. I know they're problematic and I'm trying to not say them. You know, I'm still learning to.
Yeah, we are totally unfinished entities.
Yeah, but there's still, yeah. And it's, I have someone called Bailey who's my, more or less my consultant. So whenever I write a piece for something, if I do a TV thing, if I write a joke for a thing or a radio thing or anything like that, I have her tell me what, because she's like on it. She knows everything. Like, she keeps herself up to date all the time in places I don't even know exist. And she will go through it and say, that, oh, that's problematic, and, oh, you accidentally said something that was binary, or...
I wouldn't say that, or...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, you need to know the history behind this phrase. But it's also important to say, oh, no, I didn't know what I was saying. Like, I've made mistakes. I've made so many mistakes. We've all done that, and there needs to be that space. Like, when I talk to comedians who don't know anything about this, and I try to tell them why the material is really offensive to someone or damaging... I can feel that immediate feeling of them being like, oh, but I didn't mean to, and I didn't know what. And you go, yeah, I know this hurts. I know it hurts so much.
But your intention is irrelevant.
Your intention is irrelevant, and yet your feelings are irrelevant. You know, yeah, boohoo. You cry to me, but then stop crying and then just fix it.
Like, and don't take your crying to the people you have hurt.
Yeah.
Like, that's so unproductive.
Oh,
and,
my God. Yeah,
painful.
Well, I've had long discussions with them. There's a few comedians who will, like male comedians, who will just write me and be like, so explain this feminism thing to me. And I'm like, I don't...
Pay me.
You're going to pay.
Cough up, bitch.
Yeah, I'll type in everydayfeminism.com and then you can do your own work. Like, I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, but it's actually not really good for your cause if you don't want to teach me about this, because the communication is really important. It's just like, oh my God.
You're not good for my cause because you're clearly not interested in it. This is just like bullshit posturing.
Yeah.
And you know that if you were able to explain it to them in completely eloquent language, they'd still find something to complain about. These people that want to complain about that shit are just not dedicated to learning in any way.
Mm. It's the most important thing. It's just, it's made me a better person. It's made me a happier person, being aware of, I guess it's empathy, isn't it?
You and know, like your own limitations as a person, like yeah. your own limitations of what you can experience and what you can empathize with and the things that you are mindful of when like presenting stuff to the world. Like in the cab over here, my nice ex-girlfriend Jasmine tweeted me and was like, hey, can you put like a content note for domestic violence on the last episode that I'd done at this point of this podcast, where Naomi Alderman talks about stuff related to her novel The Power. And like, I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna, you know, say no, everything I do is perfect and I don't need to go back and change anything or do anything differently. Like, there is a limit to what I have experienced and what I'm thinking about on a daily basis. So I think everyone benefits from
absolutely. And it hurt,
being told.
It hurts being told. Like, it hurt it you because you want to be such a good person, etc. Like, I put up, was it after Trump was elected last year, I went on a, I don't remember what group, it was some group, and it was like an anti-racism group. And I basically went, hey, what can I do? Like, what can I do as a white person? What can I do to make this better for people? And I think I must have felt really good about that. I must have felt really fucking good. Like, oh, you know what? You put yourself out there. You offered your help. And then I was just roasted. People going, fucking Google it. How dare you ask people of color what you can do? Like, stop taking our time. We've written so many pieces about this. Just go and Google it. There's loads. And you need to just shut the fuck up. And I was like, oh, of course. Yeah, it makes sense.
I've been that guy that's emailing me. I have been the dude that wants to be educated for free.
All I wanted to do was delete that status, but I knew I couldn't.
Yeah,
you can't, because it's educational for other people to read, and you would remove education from other people who can see your mistake and not do it,
and erase the labor of the people of color that have bothered to reply
the
to
labor.
You
yeah, and you just have to learn and say thank you very much for replying, I understand that.
I am a piece of shit. Okay, so we've just been laughing. We just laughed. That's cool. We love laughing.
Yeah.
What do you think is funny? Like, what makes you laugh?
My friend Ed is my first initial. I'm lucky to have a lot of just hilariously funny people in my life, because I'm a comedian, so there's a lot of them. My friend Ed is probably the funniest, and I'll tell you how funny he is, and this might be a bit dark, but hopefully it won't be too dark. But I'm directing his show this year called Wonderland, and it's a really good show. And so I watched him in Maidenhead. He did a gig in Maidenhead. So we drove together to Maidenhead, and then we drove back. It was on Saturday. And we took like a detour to go past like a drive-through McDonald's because we were so hungry. And we were next in line in the drive-through, and he was saying, what do you want? And I checked my phone, and I saw there'd been the attacks, the terror attacks. And I just said to him, there's been terror. But then we had to drive up to the drive-through, and I was just like, oh, I don't know, just three cheeseburgers, whatever, something. And he ordered, and like while we were finding it, I was reading all this out loud to him, and it was just so sad, and I got like tears in my eyes, and I was scared, because this was at this point it was still happening, and people didn't know where the attackers were, what they were doing, where they were headed, and we were fairly central in London, and so we just sat there, and we were still hungry, so we were like eating whilst there was this really horrible atmosphere of just, this thing just happened. Everything's very scary right now. And I've never been scared in London before. I've never been scared. I've never been afraid of terror before. I've been angry about it and sad about it, but I've never been afraid. And we just sat there. And then he just said like a joke, not an insensitive joke, I think he was saying something like, oh, imagine if they came here and this is how they found us, just surrounded by like
cheeseburger wrappers. In a drive-thru.
How were they found? I would rather not say. And how he made some stupid joke about how we would be like, oh no, wait, I'm not finished yet. Wait, wait.
One more bite, one more bite. Yeah. So what is Ed's name?
Ed Hedges. He is so funny. And if I can in any way help getting other people to see how funny he is, I mean, that would just be the best.
That's such a nice position to be in your career, like enabling other people to get seen.
Mm, it's really fun.
Do you feel like you're doing well? Like, are you happy with your career? Like, do you feel it?
I'm so happy. I'll tell you, in 2016 was a horrible year in so many ways. I mean, of course, in the world, but also like career-wise. Like, my show wasn't finished until the very last, like at the end of December, and even though it should have been finished in June, I made a lot of bad decisions. I worked with a lot of people I shouldn't have worked with. I said yes to things I shouldn't have said yes to. I had some awful gigging experiences, and my tour was so far from what I wanted it to be. And like every day I had some kind of frustration. I would get like regular phone calls with my agent at like midnight, where we would both just be screaming about something that again had been going wrong, and oh, someone was useless again. And it was just, it was a really bad year. And then at the start of this year, I made a decision to go with my gut feeling, which is probably the most terrifying decision I've made, because I didn't know if I could trust my gut feeling. That's you. Like, your gut feeling is who you are.
Yep.
And what if that's wrong? What if that tells you to do things that's bad for you? Like, not bad for you, but that would push you into places you wouldn't. What if your gut feeling suddenly told you to quit comedy and, you know, do
become
something else? Yeah, become a cop. I was thinking about the worst job you could have, and you nailed it. Yeah. Become a fascist. But I decided to try and do that, because otherwise it would just be pain. Everything would just be horrible, and it would just be making decisions, and I would hate doing the things I did. So throughout 2017, I've followed my gut feeling, even when it meant saying no to things that would pay me so much money, but it felt wrong. Like, I've been in meetings with people offering me amazing things that would have made me like hugely famous by now, where I've said, I refuse to do this unless you get more people of color, people of different sexualities, we need to have trans people represented. We need to have, like, because I refuse to do this because at the moment we're four white, straight, cis women in this project that you have. And that is not okay. And I will not be part of it. And they've gone, well, it's too much work.
We're going to do the project.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And I'm saying no. And then it's still happening. It's still out there. But that's a gut feeling thing. And I took a risk. I had to choose between one of the biggest tour promoting companies in the world, you know, people who do Eddie Izzard, like people who, like, really, they've done tours for years, and then my friend, who has only done his own tours, Mike Watson and his company Impatient Productions, and they've only ever produced his own tours, but I just really like him, so now he's producing my tour, and they've never done it before, and it's a risk. At the moment, we've sold way more than I ever had with the last tour at this point, but so it's going well. Like, that's what it means. Like, when I at least follow my gut feeling, it feels like the right thing.
Yeah. And I guess the question, like, do you feel like your career is going well? It's more like, are you proud of the way things are going? Like, it's not necessarily like, are you the most famous comedian in the world? It's like, are you producing work that you're proud of, that you are proud to put your name to?
Yeah.
Are you like connecting with people that you're interested in? Are you working with interesting comedians whose work you respect? Like,
exactly. And that's exactly.
Like, yes, you are.
If you'd asked me last year, it would have been a big no and I would have crumbled. Now it's everything I do is, I'm so behind it. There's been one project that I'm a bit concerned about that is going to come out soon. It'll be... a lot of people will see it and I'm not sure about it, but because I don't like when you leave it up to other people to edit it and stuff. It's so risky, but sometimes you do have to take some kind of risk because otherwise things just don't get made. And but in general, I have my, like, the things that I have continuously this year is I have my monthly night at Phoenix Artist Club, which is
where we met.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And and which is lovely and good. I have my podcast, which I love to bits. I love it so, so much.
I love your podcast.
Oh, thank you. I did an interview yesterday, and it was just... The one thing that makes me a bad interviewer is throughout an interview, I just keep thinking, oh, this is so good. This is so good.
This is quality
shit.
Oh,
my God. And then I forget to listen to what they've said. I'm like, I'm sorry. What? So I love my podcast. I love my new show. I love my tour. I love... Like, I've just taken my career and I put it in the direction I wanted to go. And I'm in a situation where, like, Piers Morgan called me a rabid feminist, and I think that's all I've ever wanted.
So true. He's inconveniencing your life, but
But also he paid me the biggest compliment, which is I'm not endorsed by Piers Morgan, which...
You are unendorsed by Piers Morgan, if anything.
Yeah. God, imagine having a job you don't like.
So it's really amazing to be, like, doing creative work that you're proud of.
It really, really is. It's the best. It's really the best. And it's a lucky, fortunate situation. I mean, I have family members who have jobs they hate that just can't. Like, there's nothing else, you know. For various reasons, you can't.
Yeah, you can't wiggle out of it.
Yeah, it's a job. But you need a job. And if you can't find other jobs, if there's you need the money. Like, it's very privileged. You can't just be like, oh, quit your job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like...
Oh, I remember watching, like, the front cover of a Danish magazine once, and it said, are you stressed? Take 3 months off work. I was like...
Who can do that?
No.
Even I, who have a job I like, can't do that. Speaking of 3 months off, summer, blah, 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 what comedy are you looking forward to this summer? What are you going to see that's going to make you laugh and make you happy?
Oh, my God, there's so much. There's so much. So there's... do you mean, like, any kind of comedy?
Okay. Maybe, live stuff in London, I guess.
So June and July... are the best months to be in London comedy-wise, because the Edinburgh Fringe Festival is in August and everyone, all the big good comedians, are doing 20, 30 previews of that show. And by now, most of them will be kind of finished, so you will see an almost finished product. Most of them are free or very, very cheap. There's a festival called ARG Comedy Festival, which is on the 1st and 2nd of July. And they have comedy from like noon to 10 p.m. For 2 or 3 days, like a festival in Shoreditch. I don't know what the tickets are, but no matter what they are, it's very cheap for the amount of shows you can see. And these are like big shows. These are like Sarah Pascoe, Nish Kumar. And you can just see like 12 shows a day. And there's so many of those. There's also Laugh Out London has a comedy festival. Same thing. I do a bunch of previews at the Phoenix Artist Club with Ed Hedges as well, the guy who's showing
the cheeseburgers.
Yeah, the cheeseburger guy. And so it's the best. So who I think you should go and see would definitely be Ed Hedges. He is we talked about intersectionality and stuff. Like, he is a very straightforward, white, straight, cis man. But he's a very, very, very good storyteller, and he has an amazing heart, and he is very, very funny, and his show is a very good story. It's a dark story, but it's really good, and he tells it beautifully. Athena Cook-Blenu, she was on my podcast recently, and she is so cool. She's so cool. Oh, she's so good. So her show's called KMT, and I think, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm so excited about seeing it. Evelyn Mark is a Swedish, Chinese. Those are two hard words to say next to each other, I just realized. Chinese, Swedish. Jesus fuck. Comedian that I used to live with. We moved to the UK together. Haven't seen her for years, but she was always good. She's doing her first ever show. I forget what it's called, but Evelyn Mark, she's amazing. If you're in Edinburgh, Hannah Gatsby is going to win everything. Like, she's like...
She's the one to watch.
She's the one. So she's already, like, she's doing, she did her show in Melbourne and everyone's already talking about it. So
it's a done deal.
Sarah Pascoe is doing a show called Lads, Lads, Lads.
Do you know what? So I never see stand-up comedy. Like, I never see, I go and see you. I go and see Rob Delaney. End of list.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
My number one crush, Rob Delaney. But in 2009, I moved into a house not that far from where you live at the moment. And when we moved in, my old housemate, Martha, who's very, very funny and very into comedy, right, is working in like comedy at the BBC, extremely funny. She was like, let's go to this like pub near us where they do like comedy. And I don't remember anyone else that was on the bill. I remember Sarah Pascoe was on the bill. And that was like 8 years ago, and I still remember her. So, like, good for her that
she
not only did not give up, but is now, like, at the level that men are at.
Yeah, yeah. She's so, and she wears the best clothes.
So, before we finish, I have a few quickfire questions for you.
Okay.
Who is the funniest non-comedian that you know?
My mom.
Cool. That's a good answer.
She's ice cold. I talk about her in my new show. She's really funny.
That's where you get it from.
Yeah.
If you went to the shop, what crisps would you buy?
Oh,
brand and flavor.
Kim's, which I don't know if you have here.
The
Danish brand. Yeah, I know.
Danish.
Yeah,
chips.
Kim's is good. Kim's also is also from the little tiny villas I grew up in. So
cool.
Yeah, and I think the. Dill? You have that?
I was like, she's gonna say fucking.
How did you know I was gonna say Kim's Dill chips? No one knows that.
I did, because I've known Scandinavian people in my life.
Oh, right, fair enough. Yeah. Well, then it just goes to show those are the best ones.
Yes. What emoji best describes you?
I think the one that rolls its eyes.
Yeah, eye roll emoji.
Yeah, that's me.
And is there anyone that you think it would be cool to hear me talk to? Like, who would you like to hear on this?
Well, that's a really difficult one, because if they're really cool, I want them for mine.
Yeah, it's true. Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you for having me.
It's okay. The studio is quite warm, so we should, like, get the hell out of here and open the door.
Get out of here.
See you next time.
See you. Bye.
Oh, do you want to plug your podcast?
My podcast is called Made of Human Podcast, and I have a website called sophiehagen.com, and you can sign up for my newsletter, and through that, you will know everything I do.
Cool. Sign up for the bloody newsletter.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.